Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Coast to Coasties podcast. It's been about a good 2 months since we've published an episode. However, you know, I like to normally call these mid-season breaks at times as a busy time of transition, as transfer season every summer is hectic at a lot of different units, and there's a lot of turnover. There's a lot of PCS in, which is the process of moving going on. And with that being said, if you're one of the people that stays at a unit, you have to kind of be the backbone for that transition as new people come in and old leave. The workload comes on to you, and that's been happening a lot at the office recently. And we've all been very busy. It's been very good training opportunities for everyone across the board. However, that has limited my availability of doing these podcasts as frequently. However, I got a number of guests that have requested to be on here that are here to deliver great and excellent content to you guys that are interested in hearing about the different fields the Coast Guard offers. And with me today, I have a very special guest who is a former and upcoming, again, so this is his second time doing this, as a company commander at Training Center Cape May. And he's on here today to talk about his career, why he loves being a company commander, and why you might want to consider applying for being a company commander as well. And I know he's going to say why you should consider it and why you should do it, but I'll turn it over to him now, and this is Chief Buchanegg.
Hey, how's it going, everybody? First, I want to say appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. I'll go into an introduction. I am MKC Vincent Buchanegg. I joined in 2005 when I was 20. I'm originally from Hawaii, and upon graduating boot camp, I went to the Coast Guard Cutter Chase 378 out of San Diego, struck MK, and then I was able to make it back home, went to base Honolulu, made second, went on to the 87 right across the pier on the Coast Guard Cutter Ahi. I then went to a surf station in Bodega Bay in California and found out I was above the cut for first, said I couldn't stay. So I took a critical fill as the EPO of Ant Astoria in Oregon. There I did 4 years, and after that I was approached by a company commander on a kind of like a roadshow and convinced me that it's a pretty good job. So I applied and I got accepted and reported 2018 as a company commander, did that for 3 years. And then after that, went straight to EPO of Joseph Gerzik, FRC, out here in Honolulu, Hawaii. And like Hunter said, I am returning to Cape May to become a company commander again.
Well, I got to start out and ask, like I do every guest that I have on here, Chief, is what got your initial interest in hearing about the Coast Guard and joining the Coast Guard? Now, you said you're from Hawaii. I think you're my first guest that's actually from Hawaii. We've had another guest on here, if you've heard the episode of the diver, Andy Murillo. But having come from Hawaii, was there a heavy Coast Guard influence in you growing up? Is that why you decided to join the Coast Guard?
Honestly, it is the opposite. I had no idea what they were coming out of high school. My dad was in the Air Force, so naturally, that is what I wanted to pursue. So I applied for the Air Force, had some complications with some medical stuff and the recruiter. Long story short, did a little 2-year break from high school and found myself in Vegas with my parents because it is pretty pricey to live out here. So we moved to Vegas and didn't really like the college scene, was making kind of some bad choices. And then my dad was like, want to try this military thing again? He suggested the Coast Guard. And I was like, I don't want to be a lifeguard. I had no idea what they did. Didn't even know San Island, where I've been stationed, you know, pretty much almost half my career existed, because it's in a small pocket off the side of Honolulu. So I had no idea. It's one of the best decisions I've made in my life in general. So there was no Coast Guard presence in my entire time here in Hawaii until I joined.
So from my perspective, just wondering how you would take on this, is that when I first saw a Coast Guard influence of recruiting, it was actually a Marine Corps recruiter. I was going with just a friend there. And the Marine was very adamant that for years and years, he had known Coasties, and he said it was the second hardest military boot camp that he had heard of. Of course, he highlighted the Marine Corps being the hardest one at Parris Island, but he was very adamant that the Coast Guard boot camp was second hardest. And he said, what you're not going to understand is when you go there, it's the mental game that sort of is what makes that so difficult for people. Did you experience that at all while you were going through as a seaman recruit in boot camp, that mental side of game that he was maybe alluding to?
For sure. I think that would be the number one thing, would be the mental. As you know, and some of our listeners know, it's everything's thrown at you all at once, and you have to retain it, get tested on it, and if you don't get tested on it, you get put in sniper position or whatever the case may be, and it's ultimate just a download of information that you're nowhere near accustomed to in 8 weeks. And 8 weeks seems long, but it's actually really short. And I would say definitely when I went through, mentally was the toughest.
And then what the company commanders in my company were keen on telling me, and this can sort of allude to you now returning to Cape May, your first stint as a company commander, is they said, you think you guys have bad company commander school is way harder than this. And we had seen maybe one glimpse of company commander school because, like you said, you're constantly under the gun in boot camp, obviously, so you're not out there looking for them. But they had come and done about a one-hour course to try to teach us marching techniques for their development and curriculum. So I guess let's tailor this into what was your experience like going back to Cape May, going through that company commander school that's required of becoming a company commander?
So it was, I would definitely agree that it is harder than boot camp. I would say the reasons why, from my experiences, I went back to Cape May for company commander school, and I was 32 at the time. And when I went through boot camp at 20, your body doesn't recover the same. So the physical aspect of that for sure was challenging. And on top of that, you know, if you're in the fleet, you're not doing boot camp activities, whether it be IT sessions or any other remedial sessions that you're doing. You're not doing that on a normal basis. Yes, you're working out, but not under those circumstances. So the physical aspect for the people that do apply for CC school, you're generally older than you were when you boot camp, and as well as mentally. So that would have been in 12 years, at my 12-year mark. So at that point, you're established certain habits, or you've either made it to where you are at a certain point, you're a high performer. So humbling yourself and pretty much being told that you're not good enough when you've been told up to that career, up to the point of your career, that you're pretty good at what you do. And to be humbled is another hurdle that I faced when it's week three Thursday of company commander school, 7 weeks. So was when I was humbled. I could still smell the breath, feel the spit on my face from just the CC instructor yelling from a distance. I could literally picture that time. The moment that was going through my mind was like, who are you? I have made it in my career. Who are you to tell me I'm not good enough? That for sure was a hurdle that a lot of students coming in could possibly face based on wherever they are in their careers when they apply.
And does company commander school, you said it's 7 weeks, does that take sort of the same general path that boot camp did, where you come in, you get all your medical done, that's the first portion of it, and then you have that meeting with your CCs? This may be a little bit different because I went through during the strict COVID time in 2021, spring of 2021, so you were probably just leaving after your first company commander stint around that same time and seeing all these implementations in place. But we had our 2 weeks of quarantine isolation. I know that's not a thing anymore, but however, boot camp has always been that you go in, you get medically indocked, and then you get introduced to your CC staff. Does company commander school work a similar way?
Yeah, it's fairly similar. Obviously, everyone that's applying is fit for full. They provide medical information upon application. And then once you get there, the medical, whoever it is, the duty HS, whoever's on shift when we show up, will just ask us and tell us that, you know, what we're about to go through. And then if they have any injuries or illnesses throughout the school, to just, you know, make it known, and they'll be able to take care of it. But you run a PT test just to make sure that you're still good to go. And then once the PT test, it's similar to what everyone else had experienced in boot camp, where there's a ceremony. It's like a pickup ceremony, and that's the first time you see the CC instructors, and the captain makes a speech and then kind of tells you, you know, this is the best decision you've made in your career. Good luck. We're hoping that you make it through. And then in come the instructors, and then it's game on at that point.
And the instructors for Company Commander School, are they specifically for Company Commander School? Or once you are a company commander, you could be assigned the school for a duration of your time as a company commander?
Yes. So they are specifically for Company Commander School, but however, they are pulled from the regiment. People apply for it, get interviewed, and then the staff then selects either the school chief along with the captain and the instructional branch. They'll make the decision who they want to bring over, and then they'll get selected, and then they become an instructor after doing a couple, maybe a year or two on the regiment, and then they'll go over to the instructional side.
So I want to touch on with this is that in boot camp, you get a lot of people like myself. I'll be the first to admit that I was in this grouping that know nothing about military rank and file systems and have just no clue whatsoever as to what's going on. So the first couple interactions we had with petty officers coming inside our squad bay yelling at us, we were saying, sir, no, sir, to them. And we know nothing about the rank structure and file. So they give us that whole chain of command list. And I'm just kind of wondering, as the company commander school side, if there's that, because you've been in the Coast Guard all those years that you had mentioned, that higher expectation that you pick up on this stuff instantly. And so now you're getting into even meatier and grittier things that we can't even fathom just coming in off the streets in Cape May boot camp.
Yeah, I think the expectation is higher in a sense of, you know, they don't have to break you down necessarily from civilian to military mode, but the curriculum for CC is different than the fleet. So, you know, we're all fleet ready people, but then we're not marching to and from unless you're at A school or maybe a Chiefs Academy, but, and then you're for sure not teaching how to march or even handling an M16 for manual arms in most rates. You know, you're not really shouldering in your right shoulder or whatnot. So I would say the expectation is just that, you know, you come as an adult, come as a squared away person with great work ethic. And then all the things that you're learning in CC school, if you get selected and you get chosen after the interview and you get picked up, once you get received orders, they'll send you kind of like a couple guides, a couple manuals to study up on, so you're not completely clueless. And for the majority part, depending how long you've been from boot camp to CC school, some of the stuff comes back immediately. For me, it was 12 years. One instance I can say that didn't come back for me quickly. When the captain walked in, he said, "Eyes," and I had no idea to say "click." Like, it was been so long that he said "eyes," but the rest of my shipmates in my class immediately say "click." And I looked around and I'm like, how did you know to say that? So things do escape your memory, but the longer you're there, things will start to come back. You know, how to belay your last, how to request permission, how to march, how to do all these things, because we've done it at least, you know, for the 8 weeks of our career.
Absolutely. I would say too, just to touch on one other thing in CC school, is going back to the interaction that I had with them, is that part of the curriculum then too, that you will interact with recruits from boot camp to hone your own skills? That's part of the CC school curriculum?
Yes. So when I went through CC school, they have revamped it since. So, but the bones are still there. Normally, I want to say, were you the senior company at the time or around senior company when the CC school students came to you guys?
I think we were either the senior company or 1 week prior to. It was very close to the end of boot camp. I recall that.
Yeah, so generally that's what the CC school tries to do, is try to get the senior company so that they've already kind of made it and they can kind of act like an adult. And it's just to kind of see how the CC school student is going to do, so that it's not real scenario. They can learn from their mistakes. It's kind of like almost like a check ride per se, to where just kind of get the awkwardness out and see if they can actually do it in a real scenario. Because, you know, doing it for the first time, interacting with a recruit for the first time after you graduate would not go well. It would just be really awkward from experience. So
Well, I'd like to extend before continuing on this discussion a congratulations to completing CC school. I know that's one of the hardest achievements to do in the Coast Guard. And to be one of those select few individuals that have done that, I extend you a complete congratulations on that, too. I know all the hard work and dedication you had to put into that is instrumental into development of recruits at boot camp. To go on forward with that, what I would like to ask now is, okay, so you've graduated CC school. Now you're going to be a company commander on the regiment of Cape May. How's that first company cycle tend to work for a newly minted company commander?
So I graduated in the winter class, which graduated in March. I was there from end of January through February, and then graduated sometime like the first week of March. And upon that, you return to your unit, which is super awkward because you just went through this crazy training, and then now you're going back to an ant, and you're dealing with aides and climbing towers and whatnot. So it's kind of awkward turning it off and then doing just regular Coast Guard stuff. So then you, normal PCS, you show up, and then you, normal check-in process. You have a check-in sheet, and you check in with all the supervisors, the chiefs, the master chiefs, the senior chief, anyone that's on there, battalion officer, and so on and so forth. And then you get your PQS, and then you kind of, depending on what time of month you report and the availability of a company, you'll do one break-in company. So what that means is traditionally it's going to be three qualified company commanders. You got the lead and two assistants, and then you'll have a break-in. And the break-in is pretty much kind of, it's like any other break-in for any qual, to where if you're, you know, you're a break-in coxswain or a break-in OD, the qualified is always there and you're never to be left alone. It applies the same. So if you want to be with the company, you would ensure that the qualified is within the area, and they'll tell you what to do, and you kind of just do it. And then the qualified is there just in case you forget or kind of can intervene if you're missing something. And then you do that for your first company. You'll have a break-in company. And then if you get all your sign-ups done within that company, which is achievable, it's the PQS is driven through the company. So it's, you pretty much can, if you as long as you show up for work, you can pretty much get a sign-off. And then upon graduating, if you get the green light from your lead and the section commander, which is normally it's the red rope, if you recall, and that's in charge of the building that you ran out of,
yes.
James, Healy, or Monroe. So if you get their green light, and then you'll take your assistant company commander board, and then if you pass that, then your next following company will be a first solo, which is, for me personally, would be one of the nerve-wracking times because you don't have someone the first morning shift with your own company, and you're not a break-in status. You're not waking up your lead because it's 4:30 in the morning. You're like, oh crap, what am I going to do? You kind of just have to trust the training that you did. And then from there on, you just do company after company as an assistant.
That is the nice part about having that break-in time, though, is to be able to, in case you have some things that you want to work out or, you know, need to remember, refine something, you have that one company to be able to kind of iron those situations, you know, going through your first, you're not just thrown to the wolves, which is extremely nice given your position that you're in with the responsibility levels that you have. I remember quite frankly that I don't exactly know how the time shifts and schedules worked, because we'd have long stretches some days with just one company commander, and they'd be gone for a day or two with however their liberty schedule worked with having company. I assume that it's just going to be taking liberty during company, and then your leave would be when you're not in company. But if you can delve on that at all, much appreciated. With how is the time schedule of a company commander? Because like I said, some days they'd be all there 18 hours or whatever it seemed, but maybe that was just my bad perception of getting drilled in the pavement.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, when recruits are in, it seems like, you know, we never leave the regiment, which is actually the opposite, you know. So I whenever someone wants to apply at BACC, and I, it's, the schedule is always what they bring up. And I think we have one of the best schedules out there. If you want to compare of just being on FRC, right? You're underway for pretty much possibly 5 days. You're pretty much at work the mm-hmm. entire time. Yes, you're going to sleep. But if you're standing watch, if you're on a case or you're just up and about, you're not going home. So compared to that schedule, a station schedule, and schedule is pretty legit. So I can't really compare that to the CC schedule. But bottom line is the way the schedule is the recruits just need some kind of supervision from a company commander from the time they wake up to the time to go to bed. So we wake them up at 5:30 and then they go to bed about 21:30. So between those hours, a company commander has to be there. So then if there's three company commanders in a company, you just split it. If you think about it, right, wake up to lunch. So if you want to say morning chow to noon chow, then noon chow to evening chow, and then evening chow to pretty much tap. So like you split it up in three. So the shifts are based off of that. In order for a CC to get a day off, you would then take the two CCs and then just split them down the middle. Mm. You wake them up and I'll meet you at lunch. You take them from lunch and I'll put them to bed. And then that affords that one CC to have that day off, the third one. And then on top of that, if you do see company commanders, all three of them there, including the break-in, those are probably milestone where it's best practice that all entire team is there to be there for colors, when they earn their colors, when they receive orders, obviously graduation, confidence course, pupil sticks, if they still do that. But those are the times where you would see all three of them, including the break-in. And then possibly, you know, we're all human. We're just, you know, coasties that wear a cool cap. So things happen where take care of things at home. Maybe someone has to go to the emergency room or there's something's going on, an appointment or whatever. So that's where you would see a longer CC there for is just covering for the other CC while they take care of their personal matters.
How was it when you would leave the recruits at boot camp and go home? How easy is that transition to turn it on and off initially? I'm sure over time you get better with it, but just that initially, you said going back to your unit, the ant unit, it was weird coming back to that. So when you're in that CC mode, how was it initially with turning that on and off, going home to the home they provide you as a company commander in Cape May? I believe what Cape May does is they provide everyone homes because it's such an expensive area to live. Is that correct?
Yeah, so housing is right outside the gate. It's fairly old, the buildings, but the insides have been renovated and whatnot. So it's beneficial for a company commander because the early hours and late hours that we do stay, you know, sleep is key. So 2 minutes from the gate is, you know, saves a lot of time for, like, if you wanted to live out there, you would have to kind of live there in order to afford it, because it is on the island for sure is expensive, especially during the summer. But in order to answer your question, to turn it on and off for me, personally, I would say it wasn't difficult. It was almost like I exerted that energy at work, and then when I was home, my body knew it needed to relax. It's a different scene at home. You know, there's not a bunch of 18-year-olds running around not knowing what to do. You know, it's just your family's there, so it doesn't really draw that type of energy, or whatever you do at work, it doesn't require that at home. For me, it was fairly easy. But I do get that question a lot. Are you going to be a CC at home? And what I tell everybody is, if you naturally, in your Coast Guard fleet job, if you bring work home, it's not going to change if you become a CC. You're going to bring work home. And if you don't bring work home, all of a sudden, like, you're not going to start bringing work home because you're a CC. So I would say a lot of habits, people need to look, what do they do currently? The company commander heightens certain things, but if you're not, I bring home work home now occasionally, but that's just because I have a CAC reader that I can log in and check an email or send something out. So, you know, I do that as an EPO, but as a CC, I really bring work home when I was there last, and I don't plan on doing it this time around.
Now, that's very nice to keep that balance in between itself. I know, just speaking on your MKC side of things, that if you work really hard all day and you're sweating off in a very hot environment doing an engine overhaul, the last thing you want to talk about is engineering probably when you go home. It's time to turn that dial away.
Yep.
And
yeah, for sure.
Get into, okay, this is my home life again. And so you can just carry that same transition mindset to the company command, a different job, but same situation. You know, you can have
right.
your work mode and your personal life mode that can stay distinctly separate. Okay, so tailoring into next, if we're talking about just the area in Cape May in general, of course, you hear a lot of people at boot camp saying, oh, I hate Cape May, I never want to go back there. But interestingly enough, everyone that I've met that was in Cape May, either as a CC or they were there on one of the cutters that are also right near Cape May, has a positive perspective of it in the sense that they actually like the area and when you can enjoy it and you're not just getting to get your little glimpse of freedom on the Sunday runs. You can actually enjoy the community, the area. It's pretty nice down there. Could you attest to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up in Hawaii and then being stationed in California, what I can appreciate about the East Coast is that you can almost go to like any state that's around and it's not a 12-hour drive going from Southern Cali to Northern Cali. It's doable. So, you know, to be able to go to a different state and see other things, I think was beneficial for me and my family. And the Cape May area in the summer is beautiful. It's packed. The weather's, it's hot. And the winters, I think it's common to other states. You know, the winters are bad, the winters are good. But what when people ask me like, why are you going back? You can't really control where the Coast Guard takes you in terms of how the weather or how, you know, how close is the Walmart or the Costco? Can't really control that, but you can control if the job is good. And the job, for sure, Cape May makes up for Cape May, because you spend, out of the 3 years, 80% of my time was at work. So the job made up for whatever Cape May could or could not provide. In terms, obviously, it's not Hawaii, and, you know, that's why I'm here, but it definitely makes up for the area, but it's not that bad.
And then I guess this would be a good time to talk about. So benefits to being a company commander as you were going through your first time, I know they get, you can fill me in on this too, but I believe they get a kind of a special duty pay and you also get a priority pick coming out of being a company commander. So is this how you were able to get back to Hawaii? I might also ask.
Yes, you're correct. We do get special assignment pay. I believe it's 375. I think it's number, assignment pay 4 is, I don't know my numbers. I think the higher the number, the better it is. But it is 375 a month for being a company commander. You also get, it's a priority 3 with, you know, the added 6 that we added a couple years ago. But what I can say, I'll speak on that a little bit. So if you are a support rate, you know, Yeoman, MST, or not the traditional MKBM, ultimately that's like a number 1, because you're competing, you got to look at who you're competing against that have a higher priority than a 3 for the Yeoman rate or the DC rate or whatever the case would be. So that in itself, think of it as a priority 1. It's like a unwritten priority 1. And then on top of that, you get a uniform allowance upon reporting. It's about $1,000 and some change just to kind of buy more uniform items, get things tailored and whatnot. And one thing they added when I was there is you get 1 service wide point that adds straight to the, it's not a, you know, a formula. It's just at your final multiple, it's one additional point upon earning your company commander pin.
Oh, wow. That's pretty nice. That's huge, actually, in certain rates with how competitive they are. Like having that extra bonus service-wide points is, that could be career-changing, literally, to just have a couple of those points added in
for
any
sure.
spectrum of realm. Every point matters in those competitive rates. That's something I didn't know existed. That's pretty cool info that you just dropped. Okay. So what I guess I'd like to ask next is, you kind of alluded to this earlier, but you said that the company commander school people get pulled out of the company commander rotation. Is this also the case for those red sash members, the section chiefs? Do they also get pulled out of the normal CC rotation, having increased level of experience? Is that how they got to that position?
They do get pulled out of the rotation. So what a section commander is it, think of it as like a building manager. So, you know, if you recall, do you remember what hall you ran out of?
I was in James Hall.
James Hall, concrete jungle. So James, you have James Hall, and then you have Healy Hall, and you got Monroe Hall. Sexton Hall, obviously, that's for processing. So no one really runs companies out of there. It's just where recruits go in and sleep while they're waiting for their company to form. But each red rope is in charge of that particular building and all the companies that run in that building. So with that said is, you know, they want to ensure, you know, the lights are working, the AC is working, the heater is working, the doors are working, that every company in there is getting what they need to safely train. Mm. On top of that, they're making sure that, you know, the CCs are getting what they're needed to conduct boot camp in a safe manner. And then also checking up on them, making sure that the recruits are getting what they need. And they also have the rephasal reversion authority, meaning like if a recruit wasn't academically getting it and needs to get rephased, then it's ultimately up to the red rope to make that decision with the recommendation of their company commanders and the recruit's training record. And then they kind of can send them back a week or tell them let's put them on probation or whatever the case may be. So they're pretty much this overall, whatever's going on in that building, the red rope is in charge and making sure that it's running smoothly. And then they are the ones that read the graduation. If you remember when you graduated, the person that was reading where they're going and what they are as, you know, seaman or seaman apprentice, whatever the case, going in Coast Guard cutter, Joseph Gerzik, whatever, Honolulu, Hawaii, they're the person reading it at the mic. Is the final like job for them.
I did remember they use their position very wisely in terms of the public display scene. Early on in my boot camp experience, we had a guy that got very informal with our company commanders to the point where he messed up and he kind of just laughed it off and said, "Sorry, man," to the company commander. And That was very egregious what he did. And what the section commander did was they made our whole company go downstairs and watch him hold the mattress as kind of like a display as to, you definitely don't want to be doing this sort of stuff. And that was really early on, so that kind of set the tone for our section commanders into how they expected us to conduct ourselves as being seaman recruits in there. But at the same time, it was pretty cool because towards the end, we had one of our guys mess up, and he allowed him to kind of make a public apology to the group and also save him in an act. So I see where they can get their hands involved somewhat, but it's kind of more of an overall management scene. Like, we'd only occasionally see that section commander for big things when maybe half my company got red belts one day, and that's when he came out and formed the probation formation sort of deal. But they kind of have a more managerial role overall, I guess, is what you'd say.
Yeah, for sure. And when I was there last, you know, I used my section commander when I needed them to make an extra point, or that way it doesn't, you know, our voices as their lead or their assistants can get old if we're saying the same stuff over and over again. So just to bring in that red rope or even the battalion commander, the gold rope, to come in, and because we don't have one goal and different ways of messaging, different people have different ways of saying things, or whether it be they're connected a certain way from backgrounds. You know, the regiment is unique in that aspect of one team, one mission. So definitely when I needed a message to be delivered a little bit heavier or whatnot, I would definitely call on the red rope, because obviously they have higher authority than the lead does.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely felt the impact and saw that we used to have what we'd call Chief Frazier strength. When he'd come in, we'd hold the piece a little bit higher, just a little bit longer, it seemed, because you have that presence of the red sash there.
Nice.
But getting back to sort of the overall perspective of your company commander time and career, when you ended up leaving your first stint as a company commander, and this should have been 2021, you were saying?
Yes.
And you went back into the fleet. I'm curious as to how your perspective had, like, changed, or sort of like perspective in the sense of, I guess what I'm asking is sort of maybe your training mentality of the new guys coming out into the fleet. So maybe the new seaman recruit coming out. Because I recall we had a company commander come onto my cutter. He had just gone out of his rotation as company commander boot camp. And it took him about a month or month and a half to really adjust back to that fleet mindset. But then what ended up coming of that was he said that it almost widened his senses of, like, being a better mentor and trainer to the new people coming into the fleet. That was his perspective. So I would like to get yours of going back into the fleet. How was it?
Yeah, 100% agree with, I believe we're speaking about Chief De La Rosa. I ran company with him. Great guy. He's actually an EPO in Cape May for one of the FRCs. So I'll be seeing him again. But definitely my perspective is coming back into the fleet for sure is more of a trainer and kind of making sure people get what they need as opposed to just telling them what to do and hoping that it gets done. So more patience on my end, because the fleet is completely different than boot camp. You know, you got real adults that are doing the job and sometimes just are misguided. So coming back to the fleet and being what I've gone through and putting that towards what I currently am now as the EPO is definitely just a slower pace and just more of listening and kind of whatever they need. I'm here for what they need.
Did you see a lot of that change come from ranking up to the rank of E7 chief as well and going through the Chiefs Academy? I don't know if you did CCTI probably, but just going through all those processes, too, did you notice your role changing a lot from the last time you were in the fleet comparatively?
Yeah, for sure. E6 to E7 is a complete jump. I always, you know, I've been surrounded by chiefs. I knew kind of what the anchor meant. I never knew that the anchor, you know, it has a lot of responsibility. I knew there was, but I didn't know it was the amount of responsibility that I feel. And going through Chiefs Academy is one of the best schools that I went through, the people that I met going through. And then CCTI, that's I did go through that. That was pretty miserable, but needed. So definitely a change from before I left the fleet, and now that I'm back, has definitely changed my perspective on just being the Coast Guard in general. A lot has changed.
Over the years, I'm sure if you started in 2005, your career, so much has changed, because back then the MTSA was the really big kicker coming into effect, which changed everybody's job fleet-wide in the Coast Guard for so many years in those early stages. I know prevention itself was doing a lot of boarding activities, which you'd think Marine Inspector doing boardings is kind of odd, but back then that was the norm, so much has changed across all the field. But I guess the reason why I asked you that is to tailor into, now you're going back as a company commander second time around, do you kind of have a fresh perspective now, having this blend of, okay, this time you're coming in as a chief, you've had one stint as a company commander already, so you know how the job works, and you've had more time in the fleet. What is this sort of, coming back to Cape May, any new angle or perspective as to what you hope to accomplish ultimately coming back to Cape May a second tour?
I don't know if I have a new angle. I think the angle is created by just the people that are coming in. I don't think I'm going to change anything aside from what I already do is adapt, because as you know, the recruits that are coming in are completely different. Just the time that I was there from the time that you were there during COVID. So I would say trying to just do what I did then and still discipline, make civilians into military members, and maybe, you know, just instill some motivation and some passion that I had coming in through boot camp and going through all the things that I've gone through in my career, and just making them know that this is one of the best decisions they're making, and I'm proof of it, you know. So I don't think the different angles coming up for me. It's just knowing that this is going to be challenging, because if you think about it, the recruits that are coming in, if they're coming in at 18, they're coming in during a time where they were in COVID, during the time of where things adult-wise, you know, in high school, or they had COVID, they had distance learning. So, you know, having me yell at them for the first time in person might be different. So knowing that those challenges exist, I think is what I'm looking forward to.
I think I've noticed a lot of people that have contacted me personally on the Instagram page in terms of interest of applying to the Coast Guard. I've seen a lot more older people. I know that the Coast Guard has always historically had older people coming through the boot camp system with the 18-year-olds you're mentioning, but it just seems, I know for my company in particular too, coming into that May period, it was the time of year that people in high school wouldn't have been in that boot camp class that I was in. So I thought maybe it's just by cycle time of year for when I was going, but I think I do definitely hear a lot of older people deciding to make this shift now. I don't know if you've gotten any like word on that, or just from what you've seen, the fleet of more older non-rates coming through, but that's just something that I've noticed from what I've seen.
Yeah. On my last, so we just got a non-rate last week, and she's 22, and my previous fireman was 20. So I have yet to receive a non-rate in the older age bracket, but I do know they are out there, and they were there when I was, you know, going, when I was as a CC. There were a couple, you know, established people that were coming through the regular program, not going through the depot program, that had lived their life and decided they wanted to join. So I think it's a mix of people age-wise coming through.
I definitely, to that point of attesting to the audience listening in, is that it just proves that don't think that age is a factor inhibiting you from the career you want to carve out successfully in the Coast Guard. There's plenty of people now, I don't even know what the age cap is, but I know people in their 30s that have come through as the non-rate and had very successful careers in their Coast Guard to this point so far. So don't think that because you're a little bit older that that's going to inhibit you in any way from what I'm saying here. But I guess then what I would like to ask you is, would you have any advice? I know that you had wanted to make it a point for people to garner interest in becoming company commanders. So what advice, we can start there, would you give those people that now you're in the Coast Guard and you're eligible to apply to become a company commander? What advice would you go off of to give those folks?
Yeah, I want to say, you know, I want people to consider applying to be a company commander. And I told you this before we started, it's literally the best job in the Coast Guard, hands down. Kind of reason why I'm going back is I didn't know the impact that I would have on the recruits that I was graduating until I left and I'm running into them. Just, I would say 2 months ago, I was asked to pin one of my recruits for my fourth company. She made OS1, and she could have picked anyone. We happened to be stationed in Hawaii together, like in the same district. So she asked me, I was like, hell yeah. I think she was the first class in that company to make it. So it's the impact that I have, not knowing when I was there, is huge, that I continue to get emails or just messages, just thank you for what I did, for just doing my job. So my advice to people is, there's an impact. If you feel that you want to contribute more to the Coast Guard, to the future leaders, that it's a great opportunity to literally have a hands-on effect from day one, they coming off the bus to when they graduate. Yeah, there's a couple of myths that I would like to just debunk. I think we spoke about the schedule. The schedule isn't that bad. The lead commander actually makes the schedule. So as long as, like we spoke about, as long as the coverages are, the recruits are covered during those coverages, you can kind of just put wherever you want to go. If people have, you know, kids they got to drop off in the morning, you can take the night shift and so on and so forth. So the flexibility of, say, compared to where I'm at now, you know, sector's telling us you got to get underway, can't really say like, I can't get underway. So there's a good flexibility there. And then we talked about the benefits outside of leaving company commander as a tour is, you know, the normal pick pretty much, the priority, the special duty pay, the 1 point for the service wide, the possible award that you can get if you successfully complete a tour, and just the marks higher than your counterparts out in the fleet, whether it be a yeoman, SK, you know, being able to say in a marking period that I graduated, I molded 300 recruits in that span of 6 months compared to, you know, whatever someone, a yeoman or SK is doing in their shop is just beneficial on the marking system. It's all about advancements. And then the job is fun. You were there. It was a blast. And I guarantee, you know, when week 8 rolled around, you're like, that was pretty fun. Yes, it sucked weeks 1 through 7. But if you look back now, the memories that you had, and if it's fun for the recruit, the CCs are for sure having fun. Not in a mean way, but the job is just, it's unique. And it's not boring. It's every day is a challenge. Every bus is different. Every recruit coming off that bus is different. So having that challenge of, all right, the next company, I'm going to do better, or I'm going to make sure this happens because I wasn't able to do it, just to be able to run it back again and do it the better. You know, when you fix an engine, you're like, oh, I hope I fixed it. And then you don't really get a chance unless it breaks again and you got to try something different. But it has a unique job satisfaction. From my experience, you know, instant job satisfaction from the moment you teach the recruit something and it happens right away to day of graduation, where their parents, their grandparents, their loved ones come up to me and say, thank you for doing something I couldn't do for 18 years, whether, you know, it's make their kid into an adult or this person's wearing a uniform. I couldn't even get them to wake up. And now they're, you know, waking up before the sun rises. So just the day of graduation for sure is an emotional day for everyone. It's just kind of, you know, all the blood, sweat and tears that you put in through that company, you get that satisfaction once you graduate. And then for the CCs that are leaving, you're going to continue to get paid back when you see your recruits making third, first. I think I have a lieutenant currently in one of my first companies. He's a lieutenant now, which is crazy. He was one of my best recruits. So
it's always incredible for me because I follow some of the pages that show the boot camp graduations, just to see everyone coming through. The like I've even seen talking on the podcast before they even go to boot camp. Everyone just grows up and changes so much and become shipmate at the end of it, which I think is the coolest thing in the world, just to be able to say, is you left them, you said goodbye for 8 weeks, and they come back and you're like, congratulations, shipmate. And that holds a very high level of pride, I think, just being able to see that whole process through. And I definitely see how rewarding it is for y'all to have that honor of being able to mold so many people, too, throughout your time.
Right.
What I'd like to kind of wrap up on is, with this perspective of having, you know, the whole overall CC boot camp area, is we get a lot of people on this show that are those people that are getting ready to go to boot camp as the recruit, and they're getting ready and prepping. We all know that Cape May is a very mental game. You don't truly know eyes on the boat till you're screaming at a wall for an hour playing it. Or at least, you know, perspective of an hour. What ends up like happening a lot of times is I get a lot of questions towards right before the people actually go to boot camp, where, you know, all the thoughts are starting to run through their head, as they did for me when I went through, as I'm sure they did for everyone that's gone through Cape May, is, what am I signing up for? What am I really getting into here? I'm going to boot camp tomorrow. And I get a lot of questions that night of before. So just as the CC perspective here, talking to the people again ready to go to boot camp, what advice would you give to them as the CC before putting on that CC cap and greeting them at Cape May with a nice CC warm welcoming?
What I would say is study that helmsman. It has a lot of great information in there. And if you don't understand, because it's not normal English that's in there in terms of, you know, belaying your last. I don't think I've ever heard anyone belay their last the way we do in the normal civilian world. So if you have questions, ask your recruiter, because they can explain in layman's terms what belay your last is. I do a caretaking event over at our recruiting office where I speak to the recruits. And that's what I go over before they ship out. I just kind of break it down kind of communication-wise what is, and it's all in Helmsman. So number one would be study that Helmsman, look it up, memorize it. You have all the time in the world before you ship out to get it dialed in, because opening it up for the first time on that first Sunday is not going to be beneficial at all. Mm-mm. Because at that point you would have done at least, you know, 500 push-ups for it in the totality of like 3 days, just because you didn't know how to talk. So Helmsman for sure. Come prepared in terms of physically, you know, run the PT tests. That's going to, your nerves are going to be different when you're there. So, you know, add more push-ups and sit-ups to your counter to combat that, you know, the jitters and the adrenaline that's there, and the early wake-up time, and change your diet. So, and then try and shave that time down as low as possible so that you can ensure that you pass, and just be physically fit. Because if your body starts to fail, your mentality is going to be different. So if you can just at least check that box, knowing that you are physically ready, the mental side will come. This is all foreign to everyone that's not in the military. So I would say helmsman and come physically and mentally prepared to just accept it's going to be tough. So that's my biggest advice, without giving any trade secrets out. But, and you just do good things, you know, join for a reason. And at the end of the day, when you graduate, it's going to make all that 8 weeks worth it, because, you know, you're a prime example of what the Coast Guard can provide. And I joined for 6, and I'm approaching, you know, 19 years here shortly. So the Coast Guard in general has provided a lot. So whenever you're down in boot camp, just know that it can provide some good life experience, and just in general, good things after you graduate.
I would echo all those terms, having gone through recently in the past couple of years, is saying coming physically fit. And it's, again, I'm not here to give away trade secrets either on the lowdown, but just train your muscles in a way of like positions that you would think to normally not train them in. You've all seen the photos online, I'm sure, so there's no secrets that PCIT is brutal and works your muscles different ways than your standard push-ups, sit-ups, and pull-ups. So you need to be prepared in both ways. And that's what I'll attest to that PCIT portion. But I think you really hit the nail on the head with this whole interview, Chief, and just really enticing the appeal to at least consider looking into becoming a CC later down the road. Once you get that fleet experience and decide, I think a lot of Coasties, you know, we all kind of want to say at the end of the day, we want to make a bigger impact on the community, bigger than ourselves. And that's one of almost everyone universally's core values that I found in the Coast Guard, is that, you know, there's something bigger than themselves that they're in this for. And I feel you get a lot of that out of being a CC, accomplishing that mission, if that's your mindset. So it was really good to hear you echo those words in that sense, because it's one of the most rewarding jobs in career fields. I couldn't picture myself doing anything other than the Coast Guard, but obviously, to my point, I've had a completely different career than you have had in your stints from where you've been in the Coast Guard. We had some ATON overlap, but different even in the sense of those. So you can really show how different Coast Guard careers can be, while also all still growing members at the same time. And I think your route's a very viable route that people can strive for.
Yeah, and I want to add too, on the committee commander job, if you feel, you know, you either lost that fire just because the day-to-day job or whatever, KMB will relight it 100%. Just being on the regiment will reignite any fire that you had when you first joined. So apply. If I can make it, any of you guys can make it. And if you guys have any questions, I'm in global. I'm the only one in global. Email me. I'll reply. I don't report till August. And even when I'm there, it's even more better because I'll have, you know, hands-on experience of the, how the regiment's running then. And if you need any help applying with your application or need any words of wisdom or just want any clarification on whatever we talked about, I'm always there and I'm always here to talk.
So I'll go ahead and I'll put your email out on the Instagram post when I make it for the podcast. Okay. But could you go ahead and just say it for here in case, because not everyone has an Instagram to like look up and see it. So if you're comfortable with that.
Yeah, it's vincent.r.bookaneg@uscg.mil. Bookaneg is spelled Bravo Uniform Charlie Alpha November Echo Golf.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you again for providing your contact info. I know, fair warning that other people that have provided their contact info on here have gotten contact by multiple fans. So you may start getting some fan mail in your inbox. But for the people coming out of boot camp, I just want to get this clarified from you, is that we were told that no contact for 1 year with your CCs after boot camp. Is that a real thing? Or were they just in the notes?
Yeah, that is in our SOP as a company commander. So, and it's also briefed to the recruits upon graduation. 365, the only contact they can have is pretty much professional. So like if you wanted to contact one of your CCs in terms of, for example, if you graduated as a non-rate and didn't go to guaranteed A school or whatever, and you're deciding between two rates and you know that one of your CCs was a rate, for example, if I graduated a company and they knew that I was MK, and then the recruit was deciding, or the non-rate at the time was deciding, do I go MK or do I go BM? And, you know, you can shoot me an email, keep it on the global, and keep it professional. And if you want, CC your supervisor so that you're not hiding anything. And then you just say, hey, chief, I know you're MK. I'm deciding between MK and BM. Just wanted to see if you had time to kind of, you know, talk about your rate. And I know we didn't have, you know, whatever the case may be. So 365 is for anything that's not in terms of Coast Guard. If you want to get personal in terms of like, hey, I drive this car, I saw you drive, you know, whatever. And, you know, you want to talk about cars and whatever, but 365, anything before that is purely based on the Coast Guard, kind of Coast Guard talk, if work advice, maybe something's going on and you just need like advice on how to proceed or, you know, whatever the case may be, because obviously all the CCs have experience in the fleet, and that's the only person that, you know, has seen them recently or whatever the case may be. But yes, 365, don't be doing the other stuff.
Got it. Well, thank you again for reiterating that. So again, that contact info for those of you that are just leaving boot camp, if you happen to run into Chief in any regards at boot camp when you end up going there, just keep that in mind for those of you who are upcoming summer and later on. So thank you again, Chief, for coming on the show. And I really much appreciate you giving your insights to everyone and sharing your brevity of knowledge. And for also, this is for future episodes coming up, Chief has also put us in contact with a couple more people with connections to Cape May. So we're going to hear from some folks at the Company Commander School. And we're also going to hear from the Yellow Sash, the battalion commander, very soon. So please stay tuned for those upcoming episodes, as they're going to give some pretty awesome, unique perspectives with their time they've had in the Coast Guard. And I know you all crave it, so that's why you keep coming back. And we look forward to hearing you all tune in on the next episode. Well, once again, thank you, Chief. And to the listeners, I hope you enjoy the show and have a great night till the next one.